You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Well, thank you everybody for coming. I've noticed that five of the six recipients are here, and I'll talk about the person who hasn't been able to make it. Hello, Doctor. How are you? You're looking very sporty today. With your hat and glasses. Come and say hello. Now, this is one of the most remarkable, incalculable treasures that Ballarat has and Ballarat refuses to recognise. Introduce yourself.
Oh, hello, Joe. It's great pleasure to be here again. I'm Dr. Anne Begg-Sunter. I'm a historian of Ballarat. My PhD studies were all about Eureka and the continuing significance of Eureka and the flag, and it's wonderful to welcome you to Ballarat again today, Joe, and all friends from Melbourne. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'd like to ask Doug to come here and say a few words. Doug's another remarkable Ballaratian, and I forgot the doctor is a Eureka Australia medalist, and so is Douglas here.
Welcome everybody again. And thanks to Joseph and everybody that's been put all their time up and done everything. And I just realised that Joseph's never been invited to Eureka at the centre down there. So I'm going to do something about it if I can, with Albert Tracy and a few other people I know. A few of our politicians might give a kick in the ass and do a few things about it. So we're hoping to get an invite to there.
Thank you, Doug. Thanks, Eureka
Joe.
Centre.
Yeah. Oh, Eureka Centre, that's right. Yeah. Well, thanks, Joseph.
Thank you. Doug's a treasure to the trade union movement. He is a local First Nations elder, and he's one of the, he won't mind me telling you this, he's one of the oldest surviving liver transplant recipients in the country. So he's a legend in Ballarat. And he still pops into Trades Hall to annoy the youngsters there, and the youngsters are in their 60s. Okay. Now, I'd like to introduce you to the Secretary Treasurer of the Ballarat Trades and Labor Council, Angela McCarthy.
Thank you, Dr. Joseph. Comrades, Ballarat Regional Trades and Labor Council is proud to nominate Dick Ryan for the Eureka Australia Medal. Dick has been and still is an active union member for over the last 58 years. Between 1967 and 1968, Dick was a member of the Amalgamated Metalworkers Union in England. Dick came to Australia in 1972 and joined the Marine Stewards Union in 1974, holding temporary office bearer roles within the union, and was relieving National Secretary for about 8 months. In 1985, the Tasmanian Liberal Government sacked all the Marine Stewards while working away in Germany. The Tasmanian Government singled out Dick to be banned from the industry. After a successful arbitration at the Commission, Dick ended up serving a 6-month suspension and was reinstated. In 1989, Dick became the Assistant Branch Secretary of the Seamen's Union Victoria Branch until the Seamen's Union amalgamated with the Waterside Workers Federation, forming the Maritime Union of Australia, or the MUA. In 1998, Dick was Assistant Secretary of the MUA, the Howard Government, during the Howard Government wharf dispute. Dick, along with all the other MUA workers, were sacked for 101 days. In 2018, Dick joined the Australian Services Union and was the main force in organising the school crossing supervisors, where he still works today. Dick has played a major role in the union and community fundraising, starting the grand final breakfast fundraisers, which keeps going today and is split between unions and helping underprivileged kids. And this event has been going for the last 24 years. And between all of that, Dick also organised security for Nelson Mandela when he came to visit Australia. So do you want to have a few words there, Dick? Well done.
Now, Dick, there's a few bits and pieces in there, but that medal has been designed and hand cast by Bill Perrin and his son. Bill and his son are very famous sculptors. It's the eight-pointed Eureka Star, and it's a pleasure to recognise all the work you've done over so many years, because today's not about the people we know. Today is about the people who've done the hard work over a lifetime who haven't been recognised, and that's what today is about.
Thanks very much, Doctor. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the people who's original landowners of this part where we're standing there today, both their elders past, present and in future. 1854 was when the rebellion started here. And it was a sign that people saying to the governments of the day that we want to have a say in what happens to us and what we're going to be prepared to cop and what we're not prepared to cop. I want to say, firstly, it's a great honour and a pleasure for me to accept this medal. And I want to thank Angela and the executive of the Ballarat Trades and Labour Council for nominating me for this. But I've got to be honest, if my dear old mother was alive, she'd clip me round the ear. Because she always taught me that you do things for people, but you don't expect to get rewarded for it. And don't ever think you're going to do things that you should do for your own advantage. So, sorry, Mum, but this is what's happened. Despite what Angela said before, I just want to say that 1985, we was selected to go and pick up the Abel Tasman, which was going to replace the old Empress of Australia in the Bass Strait run. And I got told by a member of the Greens from Tasmania that when we get over there, the Tasmanian government's going to pick a blue with the Stewards Union and we're all going to be sacked because they were behind in the polls. Well, anyway, that certainly happened. We refused the sack. We were there for a month. And I got a phone call one morning from the ABC in Hobart, said, do you realise Premier Gray has called you a thug, a gun runner, a drug dealer, and Christ knows what else. I said, well, tell him to get outside Parliament and say it, and we'll see how he goes from there. And needless to say, he refused. In 1998, we had the Wharf dispute, which again was concocted by the Liberal Party and the government under John Howard. And that went for 101 days here in Melbourne. It was sure in other states, but it was 101 days here in Victoria. And I had the dubious honour of having to take home a scab. What happened was Greg Convey, who was the secretary of the ACT at the time, rang up the union rooms and said, there's one of these scabs wants to come over and tell the truth about what's happened, how they got involved. Can we hide him? And I had to hide him. I was living down at a place called Granville at the time and had to take him over the weekend. And I walked in the door and my late wife said to me, who's this bloke? And I explained it to her. I said, this bloke's a scab, he's come over. She said, he's not getting fed here. So for the whole weekend, I had to feed him fish and chips. But what he said to me was, and I honestly believe that young kid, what happened was they advertised for people to go and work on the wharves in a different project to what the wharfies were doing. And they all signed up. And when they realised afterwards that they was actually scabbing on us, there was nothing they could do about it, because the government had ex-army people in there that were standing over them and making sure they didn't leave the nest. So that's the sort of stuff the Liberals get up to when working people. And as I said, it started in 1854 with the miners and it's never stopped. But I just want to finish up on two things that impressed me in my life from speeches. One was with John F. Kennedy in his inauguration when he said, don't ask the country what the... Don't ask what the country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. And I put that around as don't ask what the union can do for you, but ask what you can do for the union. And the second one was, in 1987, I was up in Sydney and we were leaving in the Marine Stewards office, and we had to go to a retirement party for a bloke called Tom Stooper from the Wharfies. And the last speaker was the then National Secretary of the Builders Workers Industrial Union, as it was, Pat O'Shea. And what Pat O'Shea said was really a mind-boggler. He said, all the speakers before me have wished Tom all the best in his retirement. He said, well, I don't. And he said, the reason I don't is because when you're born into the working class, you're part of the struggle from the cradle to the grave. And that's never been a truer word said in my books. Once again, I'd like to thank Angela and the Trades all and everybody and Dr. Joe for this wonderful award. And I'll never ever forget it. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, 3 years ago, as the organising committee for Reclaim the Radical Spirit of the Eureka Rebellion celebrations was, we were dying, getting sick, we decided it's about time we worked with the Ballarat Trades and Labour Council. The secretary at that stage was Brett Edgerton, who'd shown a great deal of interest in what we were doing over the years, because this is the 23rd celebration we've held, and we've now got a loose association with the Ballarat Regional Trades and Labour Council. And as far as the medals are concerned, they nominate two, and we nominate four, and obviously that number will increase, because this is really should be a Ballarat occasion. Now, I've got to make an apology for, and I'll say a few words for Eve Scarf. Now, Eve Scarf is in her late 80s, and she rang me last night upset. She lives in a nursing home, and she was coming today, but she developed a fever, and she sent her apologies. But Eve was a member of the International Peace Brigades for over 30 years, and she was a human shield in Central America in the 80s and 90s and the early first decade of the 21st century. What that meant is, at that particular point in time, in Guatemala, Honduras, all those places you hear about political extrajudicial executions, she would attend meetings, because there's always questions asked when a European is killed, because she's got both British and Australian citizenship. And she would sometimes stay in the homes of union leaders and activists who are targeted for assassination. Now, that's what I call an extraordinary human being. Now, I've interviewed her on Radical Australia a few weeks ago, and if you want to learn more about her, if you look at the podcast, Eve Scarf. So we're going to do a ceremony for her in Melbourne when she gets better, but she sends her apologies, and she'd like to wish you all a happy Eureka Day. She was very distressed when I spoke to her last night. Now, I'm going to stuff this up as I usually do, because I'm not good at pronouncing names. But I would like to call on Vasalia Govindur. Vasalia Govindur to come up here. Thank you. Now, Angela, this is a woman you need to speak to, because she has devoted many, many years to the plight of injured workers who are stood over, harassed by the workers' compensation scheme. And the fact these major changes that have been made recently have made it much more difficult for workers. So I'd like to present this to you, and I would like you to say lots of words about yourself and what you're doing.
Thank you, Joe. And thank you, Rosie, for nominating me for this award. So IWST has 572 injured workers from right across Australia. 80% are predominantly from Victoria. I started helping injured workers in 2012, initially in my role as a health and safety representative, because I couldn't understand, you know, when people get injured at work, the claim should be accepted because our system is a no-fault system. So I supported injured workers in my designated work group by basically providing them with risk assessments, minutes of meetings where, you know, the hazards were identified and there was no risk control in place. And we started getting claims accepted, but we also started getting quicker return to work rates. So when I left my DWG in 2020, after 20 years as a HSR, there was no one on workers' comp. In 2021, during COVID, we started injured workers support team with two other injured workers, because what we found is there was no place for injured workers to go to come together and find support. So we initially started off as what we would term as PPE. So a kind of, you know, a protective equipment for injured workers in that we'll come together on our weekly Zooms, try and get some solutions. IWST starts navigating with you from day one of your injury. We've represented injured workers at the Workplace Injury Commission. We now started representing workers at arbitration. And all of this is on a purely volunteer basis on top of the 40 hours of paid work that I do. Injured workers is my second family. We've learned to navigate the workers' comp system, and especially the changes that came into place last year in 2024. For us, the last 12 months has been absolutely challenging, where, you know, claims which are supported by numerous amount of information is being rejected because WorkSafe agents and the Workplace Injury Commission do not understand OHS obligations. We've actually had health and safety reps who have been injured and past the 52 weeks now find themselves without jobs. Not because they did the wrong thing. It was because they raised the concern that I got injured at work and someone else didn't do their job. So getting this award was an absolute surprise. So thank you, Rosie. But it's an important one. It actually, you know, tells us that we need to do more to empower injured workers. There's so much of gaps in the system, and injured workers are left on their own to navigate this. It seems like when you want to, you know, navigate workers' comp, you need to have a degree or some kind of certification in understanding workers' comp. Now, someone that's got anxiety and depression who can't even think about the next day, how do they think about what information do I need to provide to the IME? How do they think about, okay, there's gaps in my certificate, you know, in my COC. Do I remind my doctor to make sure that they filled in or ticked in those boxes? What we need is advocacy. Injured workers need someone to walk beside them from day one they put the claim in. But also what we need is we need a change in the legislation. We need it to become a fair, transparent, honest, accountable system. And we can't do that alone. So to every one of you here today, please support our petition. It's on the Victorian Parliament webpage. It's calling to change this current system, to make one that's fair, that's honest, that's transparent, that's accountable, but one that puts the injured worker in the center of workers' comp. Thank you very much. And thank you again, Joe.
And thank you for having such a wonderful wife and mother. Thank you. I hope you're no longer teenagers, are you? No, because you would have thought of her differently then, didn't you? Yeah. All right. All right, okay. Now, it's extraordinary to think we have such such powerful advocacy in this state. I mean, most people, you know, they switch on TV or go on the net and push a button, like something, and don't do anything about it. And that's the problem of the 21st century. A lot of people think they know a lot of things, but very few people come out and put their head above the parapet. Now, I'd like to call on Nancy Atkin to come up and her partner. Don't run away, mate. Come on. Now, Nancy is another one of those extraordinary people. See, I only interview extraordinary people on Radical Australia, and I interviewed Nancy a few weeks ago, and she was a bit worried, you know, because I can't ask penetrating questions. But she was happy with the podcast. You were happy with the interview?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
No, but look, she's an extraordinary activist, worked very hard for the community in terms of another issue which is critical to the future of the human race. And I'd like her to explain what her life's all been about.
Well, I hope everyone's comfortable because it could take quite a while because it's a few years behind me. Now, thanks very much to the Ballarat Trades and Labour Council and to the, have I got it right, Reclaim the Radical Spirit of the Eureka Rebellion for this really important occasion, this important work, reminding us what Eureka Eureka should be remembered. And just before I start, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners, the Wadawurrung people, and the land we stand on. In accepting the medal, which I'm, when I accept the medal, I really commend the intent of the organisers in recognising people who history doesn't necessarily take notice of, the unsung heroes and the many thousands of activists who over the years have changed Australia for the better and have fought to correct injustices like we just heard. And just to going back to my first example of activism, I'd like to remind people about the anti-Vietnam War campaign. And that's an example where history nowadays seems to be remembered in terms of maybe the big historic events and a very few leaders who were important at the time. They were wonderful people. But the whole campaign with thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people coming out on the streets all over Australia was not just due to a few leaders. It was due to many people like probably anyone here present who was around at that time who organised people to go to meetings, go to demonstrations, lobby parliamentarians, get a government in power that would end the war. And in my case, I was a student. We organised street theatre, we organised protests and so on and so forth. And these people, many have disappeared from the official history, and it's really a surprise to me that historians haven't just gone round and talked to people who were active at the time, because they're not hard to find. There are many, many of them who probably have many things to say about campaigns like that. And just touching on a few other campaigns I've been involved in, that, and I'll pick out the ones that are obvious here today. I mean, the antenna on Marion's T-shirt for 3CR was built by radio engineer volunteers who had learned how to make radio stations during their role in the Vietnam War, where they were running around organising underground radio channels, illegal radio channels at the time. And then they came on and became the initial radio engineers and studio builders at 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, which is a fabulous example of something that over the years has involved thousands of people, not just in broadcasting, but in administration and in building and maintaining the building where the radio station is organised. And just one more thing I've added in that I think is an example of where the work of trade unions and of activists has been most important. And we just heard about the really bad things that are happening in WorkSafe and the need for ongoing advocacy and support for injured workers. But back in the early 80s, I was lucky enough to be given a job as organiser for the Workers' Health Action Group. And that was when the initial laws were passed, which put a stop to blaming workers for their accidents and recognised that the employers had a responsibility for health and safety, and brought in the system of health and safety reps, which we've heard about today. And that important change was put through Parliament in a situation where the Minister for Industry or Labour, whatever it was a former official of the Amalgamated Metal Workers Union. And that's an example of how years and years of work by working class people and their representatives resulted in a massive change in the law, even though there's still much to be done today. So that's probably enough for me. Thanks for the invite, Joe, and thanks for organising the event.
Now, hang on. We're going to get you to do the presentation because I'm tired and emotional. So here's the microphone.
I was one of the founders of a 3CR radio program, just giving the station a plug. 1985, we set up a program called Asia Pacific Currents, still going today. A new generation's taken it over. And I think that's really important to say, that the work that we begin today will be picked up by the next generation. And it's really important that we remember those that have been working on these issues for a long time, knowing that if we do our job, we're also mentoring the next generation, that they'll understand that even when we have wins or losses, we need to keep going. For a long time we've been together and we've kept going. And so I'm really honoured. Thanks, Joe, for the chance to give Nancy her Eureka Award. And thanks for the invitation to join you today.
Now we've got the second nomination from the Ballarat Regional Trades and Labour Council.
Thanks, Dr. Joseph, and thank you for organising this as well. Ballarat Regional Trades and Labour Council are also proud to nominate Ian Fullerton for the Eureka Australia Medal. Ian joined the CFMEU in 1983 and has been a member ever since. He has been a representative on the CFMEU State Conference and the CFMEU Committee of Management. Ian was elected to Trades Hall Council in about 2000 and was on the executive for about 6 years. Ian was on the Caledonian School Council between 2002 and 2008. And since 2010, Ian has been volunteering as the bus driver for the Soup Bus, which is a very important and appreciated community event. Community service, sorry. Ian joined the Brownhill Progress Association to save the Brownhill Pool. Ian volunteers at Run for a Cause and the Ballarat Marathon. Ian's also a blood donor, but we really appreciate him because he helps keep the lights on and the doors open at Ballarat Trades Hall by volunteering at, to run the bar at nearly every event we have, and that helps us out enormously. And I'll hand it over to Ian. You're very much appreciated, mate, so thank you.
Thanks, Ange. I'm a bit humbled by this award because I don't see what I do as that significant. It's part of being a community member. I probably grew up in a family, extended family, that was highly into being involved in their communities, which led me into being, you know, kindergarten committees, school council committees, these sort of things. And when the council decided they wanted to take the Brownhill Pool, a community asset, off the Brownhill people, we decided we'd fight it. And fight it we did. For 2 years, they told us no. It also led to the reformation of the Brownhill Progress Association, which then, after 2 years, took on the running of the Brownhill Pool and ran that on a volunteer basis for 15 years. But unfortunately, as the age of our volunteers got older, some of them weren't able to do the jobs that were required, like the pump stations and things like that, that took a long time and a lot of effort. Thus, with the unfortunate lack of younger talent coming into the volunteering business of getting behind their community, the pool was given back to the City of Ballarat, who then 2 years later closed it, which is something that really annoys me. But we did get a splash park out of it, which will be opened next Friday night up here in Humphrey Street. With volunteering with the soup bus, I find that very enjoyable. You get to meet so many different people. Not everybody is on the street. Some people are really doing it hard simply because their dollars don't add up. They don't get to put their money to enjoyment. It's their bills, their rent. And as such, they need an extra meal or they need some extra groceries that, as a soup bus, we provide. We're out there 5 nights a week feeding the people. No thanks to the City of Ballarat, unfortunately, again. We use a car park in at Cameron's, who have been very kind to us and supplied us with an annex and all that to keep our clientele dry. And that clientele can average between 20 and 50 to 60 people a night. That's just at the Cameron's one. We run another one up in Wenderee at the old community centre, and that runs 3 nights a week, and that is immense as well. I would guarantee we would go through damn near a container of product a week. That's so the on-track organisation which runs Soup Bus has done an amazing job for the underprivileged of Ballarat. And last but not least, as far as Trades Hall goes, I enjoy being on Trades Hall. I get to go out and fight. Fight for the rights of every working person here when they're on strike, when they need their employer to know that they're not only fighting against their employees, but they're fighting against the wider community of Ballarat who believes in those people's rights to have a fair wage for a fair day's work. And doing the bar at Trades Hall is not a chore at all. I love doing it. I get to meet so many beautiful people and get to have so many wonderful conversations. It's a thing that I won't give up easily. So thank you. Most humiliated again. And thank you, Dr. Joe. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, the last recipient, I think, is the oldest. And because he was sitting in a chair, I decided to leave him last. I'm that type of person, you know. The Reverend Robert Stringer. Now, Robert celebrated his 80th birthday and his wife, Mary, told me he spoke for 35 minutes at his 80th birthday. So if he goes on for too long, Mary's going to come up and lead him off the stage. Now, you may remember that a few years ago that we had, I think it was a 94-year-old here, and he just went on and on and on. Well, if you live for 94 years, you've done a lot of things. And his wife gently came up and dragged him off the stage. So the Reverend Robert Stringer. Now, I'm forever grateful. Come, Robert. I'm forever grateful for Robert because in one of the most difficult times of my life, when my wife died in 2017, and we'd been together many, many decades, and Ellen and myself initiated the Reclaim the Radical Spirit of the Eureka Rebellion celebrations in 2002 because we came to Ballarat to celebrate in 2001 and we were told, oh, you're here on the wrong day. They only celebrate on the weekend. I thought, oh, how ridiculous. And I think our presence has shamed the various Ballarat City Councils now to do a few things on the 3rd of December, which is good to see. Now, Robert officiated. He did a little piece at my wife's funeral, and I'm forever grateful for what he did. Thank you, Robert.
First, I'd like to start by acknowledging the Wadawurrung people, Uncle here, and any others of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who might be here. We acknowledge that's the land that we're on, and it was taken without consent or negotiation. Like previous recipients, I feel very honoured to receive this award and quite surprised to be here to receive a Eureka Medal. And I wish to thank those who have nominated me. I've been lucky that my vocation as a Uniting Church minister, or originally a Methodist Church minister, has enabled me to be an activist most of my life. And also, I get my inspiration from history. I mentioned that this morning. One of the ones that I like to acknowledge is that the Tolpuddle Martyrs. The Tolpuddle Martyrs were way back in 1834. That's before the Eureka Stockade, 21 years before. They were five Methodist lay preachers who formed one of the first of the trade unions in Britain in the rural areas. And for that, they were put in prison and they were condemned to transportation to Australia. And that happened. And then there was a hue and cry in Britain, and some two or three years later, they were exonerated, and it took about 3 years before they were able to come back to England. So that's one of my inspirations for my activism. The other one, as I said, was the a group of women, 16 women. This was in 1873, that's after the Eureka Stockade. 16 women, again, the men were wanting to go on strike, but they couldn't do that, because if they went on strike, they would have lost their jobs and lost their crops and would have become homeless. So the women went on strike. And I'm lucky because two of the women have a family name by the name of Prattley. So these women were in Ascot under Wychwood in Oxfordshire in 1873, and they again were taken and put in prison, and again there was a hue and cry, but it was almost immediate, and it was so large that Queen Victoria was forced to intervene and to pardon the women, and they were given 5 shillings and a petticoat, and they're called the Petticoat Martyrs. So that's another one of my inspirations for being an activist. My own awakening started, as someone has previously said, was during the Vietnam War, when I was at university and I was opposed to the Vietnam War. And the New Zealand troops, because I was living in New Zealand at the time, had gone to be part of that war. And there was headlines in the newspaper, "First kill to the New Zealand regiment." And so that really incensed me. And I wrote my first letter to the newspaper at that time, objecting to that kind of headline and to the participation of New Zealand in the Vietnam War. Since then, I've been lucky. I've served in the Solomon Islands, where I helped the indigenous people to, I had to simplify all those mission European type structures so that the indigenous people of the Solomon Islands could take over and lead their own church. And it was a privilege to be part of that during the 1970s. After that, I was briefly in New Zealand and came to Australia in 1979. And my first job was to be the consultant for social justice with the Uniting Church in Perth. And in that position, we had to take some action, particularly against someone like Sir Charles Court, who wanted to make sure that if they said mining could go ahead, then mining could go ahead, even if the Indigenous people objected. And on one of the places called Nookumbar in 1981, the Aboriginal people objected to the AMAX oil company going on drilling for oil on that particular piece of land. But Sir Charles Court made sure that a convoy of 60 oil drilling trucks was escorted by police onto that station against the will of the Aboriginal people. Myself, four other clergymen and about 20 Aboriginal people slept the night on the road to try and stop that convoy. We were found by the police during the night, and in the morning we were arrested and taken about 70 kilometres to Fitzroy police station, where we were kept in jail for the day. It meant about 10 days in court, where we proved the government wrong. We proved that they didn't gazette the road properly. That was the private road into Nookumbar station. They used that as a reason why they could arrest us on a road, and we proved that they never did that, so we weren't lawfully being arrested. And then I was also accused of resisting arrest, and I proved in court, because they had videoed everything, that passive resistance does not constitute resisting arrest. So that's sort of been part of my notoriety. Since then, I've been the National Director for Social Justice for the Uniting Church and involved in many of the issues there, particularly unemployment. We opposed BHP and Ok-Tedi, where they opened that mine, that copper mine in Papua New Guinea, and just threw the tailings down the river, which then overflowed and covered the jungle. And so BHP actually flew us up there to show us how bad it was. But we certainly tried to make it clear that that was not the right thing to do in PNG. And in more recent times, well, I've been involved in the struggle, but particularly the struggle of West Papua. I'm known as the chaplain of the West Papua office. I have visited West Papua twice, and I will continue to make sure that the concerns that the Indonesian government and their savage military occupation of West Papua is well known. Unfortunately, because of diplomatic relationships, Australia as a government doesn't want to take action. But I think it is time that we noted the situation of our Indigenous people in the most immediate country to Australia in West Papua. And so I am proud to be part of the tradition in bringing attention to that particular cause and making it known to anyone who's willing to listen. So I'd like to thank you, Joe, and the committee. I'm privileged to be able to receive one of these medals, and I commit myself to keep on going to stir the pot wherever I can.
Well, thank you very much, and you get a little bag too with lots of other goodies in there. Look, that's the last of our recipients. I'd like to thank everybody for coming, but this is not the end. This is not the end. First of all, I'd like to thank Marion. Where are you? There you are, Marion. She's exhausted, for holding the flag. Gaz, who stepped in. And Joe, who's been there all the time. So thank you. Now, yes.
Sorry, I just wanted to make one little statement about the West Papuan flag that we've flown over Trades Hall on this day every year. I want to give my sincerest apologies, everybody, but it's become a real danger and a hazard. If someone falls putting the flag up, they will die. So it's been very disappointing, and I know a lot of people are unhappy about it, but we're not even changing our own flags at the moment because we've got to find a safe way to do it.
So I know some people here will notice that, and I wanted to give my apologies, but there is a good reason. We can't do it safely at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, as I said, we're not finished. From here, we'll be going to the Old Ballarat Cemetery to pay our respects to the miners. Angela had the privilege of attending the local council Knees Up Mother Brown at 8 a.m. this morning, and she was a bit perplexed. They spoke more about the poor soldiers who died defending the honour of the state than the miners, but we'll be going there and we'll look at the miners' mass grave, and then we'll go across to the soldiers' grave, and we'll look at the different inscriptions and how propaganda is nothing new. After that, we'll be the guests of Trades Hall, and I assume Ian will be opening the bar, yeah, and we can buy some drinks, and there we'll have a light lunch. Those of you who are interested, at 3 p.m. I'll be doing a presentation at the Ballarat Centre, not because I was invited, I just do it, about the Eureka flag from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. And when the Reverend spoke about, you know, the red petticoats are part and parcel of the Eureka legend, because the Eureka flag is made from women's petticoats. And I'll explain why if you come at 3 p.m.